Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I will try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Stephen Lyman, who is a shochu expert and the founder of the website called Kanpai.us, the theme of which is bringing izakaya culture west. And shochu is very important alcohol beverage from Japan, but it's not known as much as sake in this country. So today, Stephen will tell us all about it. So hello, Stephen. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. So first, you're known as a shochu expert, but you have a completely different job and as a medical researcher. So how did you get into shochu?
I actually was out with friends one night, and we walked into an izakaya, not knowing what an izakaya was.
Okay.
And the waitress introduced shochu as Japanese vodka. And they had a special on Tuesday nights where they would give $20 off a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So my friends and I thought it was a really cost-effective way of drinking.
Right. So, and I think that place was izakaya ten. That's unfortunately it's closed now, but
that's right.
One of the first places to educate people. Right. And then you started to go to izakaya ten every Tuesday?
Just about every Tuesday. I think in the first year we went between 35 and 40 times.
Okay. And who are your friends?
So my friend Mike Slavin, who actually built the website, and Ian Bradley, who designed the website. And then also a friend of mine named Dean Weston, who's now living in Tokyo, which makes me really jealous.
We're not going to go into the website too much, but this Kanpai.us is an amazing resource for, you know, whoever is interested in Japanese culture, izakaya and shochu. So, listeners, please visit the website. And I heard you happen to visit shochu regions in Japan on business around the same time, right? So you were kind of exposed to shochu culture.
Well, I had visited Japan the first time around that time. But when I was there, I didn't visit Kyushu. That came later.
Okay.
But I did spend a lot of time in izakaya in both Tokyo and Osaka and just fell in love with that entire style of dining.
Okay. How do you describe the style of dining?
Well, from izakaya 10.
Right. Okay.
Once I went to Tokyo and Osaka, I was on my own. I was on a business trip, so I just started walking into places that looked interesting, and people were friendly, and I muddled my way through the menu and drank a lot of beer and shochu. And had a good
time. Interesting because shochu is really enjoyed widely in Japan at izakayas, versus sake tend to be can be served at the more expensive places too. So, kind of to me, shochu is a little casual beverage.
That's right. It started as a blue-collar drink in southern Japan, and only more recently has it become popular nationwide.
So what is special about shochu for you? Because there are many other spirits than shochu.
I've always liked to pair my food with drinks, and I can do that with wine, I can do that with beer, and with sake, but they're all sort of heavy because they're all fermented, they're all brewed. They have a lot of residual sugars, and so what I discovered with shochu is this is a spirit that pairs with food, which is really uncommon.
Right. So it's cleaner and the lighter. We're going to talk about the details later, but it's a little lighter in alcohol.
That's right. It's about 20 to 25% usually, which is lower than a whiskey or vodka or rum or other distilled spirits. And then because of that lower alcohol percentage, it pairs well.
Mm.
And then because it's not heavy with the residual sugars, you can drink more easily without feeling really full.
Right. Okay. And how did you study shochu? By reading or taking classes or...
I started by trying to read, and that's actually why I started the website, because there wasn't much good English language information.
Mm.
And then I developed friendships with a number of people who worked at izakaya around the city, and they just began to teach me. And as I was introduced into the New York Japanese community, I met more and more people who could guide me through that experience.
Mm. And I heard you have also worked in the distillery in Kagoshima Prefecture in Japan. In the last 3 years?
That's right. So for the last 3 years, every fall, I've gone to Ichiki Kushikino in Kagoshima to work at Yamato Zakura, which is a handmade shochu distillery.
Mm-hmm.
There's only about 10 handmade sweet potato shochu distilleries, and that's one of them.
Wow. And you mean in Japan? Like 10?
At least in Kagoshima. I'm not sure about other prefectures.
Okay. Right. Well, we're going to talk about the regional, you know, like distribution later. But what do you say? I mean, you cannot just go visit the distillery and let me work, right? How did you find the job?
So my first trip to Kyushu was in 2012, and I visited with a friend of mine who's a jazz pianist, Seikai Ishizuka, here in New York, who's from Fukuoka. And so we started our tour in Fukuoka, and then we went down to Kagoshima. And I had met Mr. Komasa from Komasa Shuzo in Kagoshima, and asked if I could visit. So Seikai was writing the emails back and forth, but then Mr. Komasa brought along a translator with us, and then he asked, what would you like to do while you're here besides see my distillery? And I said, I'd really like to see a small distillery, and I'd also like to eat in your favorite izakaya. Don't take me to some fancy restaurant where you take VIPs. Take me to like where you like to go when you're just going to relax. And he did both of those things. And the small distillery he brought me to was Yamato Sakura. Mm.
But this really, they're open-minded, right? I mean, I'm sure you speak Japanese quite a bit.
At that time, I did not. I started studying actually after that trip.
Mm.
And it was the impetus was when I contacted through the translator who we had met in Kagoshima, I asked her to contact Yamato Zakura to ask if I could come do an internship.
Mm.
And the Toji is the master distiller, he said he can come if he learns Japanese. So that's when I began studying.
Right, but still, I'm impressed. They're very open-minded. I don't think they have any interns from four countries ever before.
The Toji is really interesting. He lived in Tokyo for 8 years doing advertising. And so he has a more global world view, where many of the Tojis you meet, they're from small towns in rural Japan, and they don't necessarily think globally.
Mm.
And so I think that's a big difference for that distillery.
Okay. Do you know how many generations they are?
I know that they opened around the time that Japan opened, so around Admiral Perry's time. So it was in the 1800s.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay. So how was the experience? Was it hard?
I work as a medical researcher, and I'm always paid to work with my brain, not with my body. And so the day starts at 5 a.m. Washing the sweet potatoes. And this distillery, which is actually a very small distillery, it's still a metric ton of sweet potatoes every morning that need to be washed and then prepped before the production can begin. That's right. And it was a one-man job.
Wow. Okay. But you got to see everything, the whole process of making.
That's right. Every day, every step is happening for different batches of the shochu fermentation process before distillation. So I was able to see in a 10-day visit, I was able to see all of the parts several times.
Mm.
And but the days would be 12 to 15 hours long.
Mm.
So it was a much harder physical labor than I was used to.
Oh, my God. So first day,
really
you can move.
That's right.
Right. And I heard eventually you're now certified as shochu advisor.
That's right. This summer, they offered the first shochu certification course in the United States, which was in Los Angeles.
Mm.
And I took the course with several other students to become part of the first graduating class of certified shochu advisors here in the U.S.
So you're now sensei. All right. And so I'm sure many of our listeners do not know much about shochu. So what is shochu?
Shochu is a traditional distilled spirit, and that's what makes it different from sake. Sake is brewed. Sake's closest relative is actually beer, even though we often call it rice wine. Shochu is distilled, so it's one more step after fermentation, in which you evaporate the the alcohol out of the mash, and then it reconstitutes into liquid form again on the other side of the still, and then that's why there aren't any residual sugars, because none of the solids come through the process.
So it's distilled, and then what kind of ingredients?
There are actually, I believe, between 50 and 54 different ingredients which you can make shochu from, which makes it very different from other distilled spirits or other alcohols, because it's not so much about what it's made from, but how it's made. That's the big distinction for shochu.
Because wine is grape and the sake is rice, so, and what kind of ingredients?
So the most popular, as I mentioned, is sweet potato shochu. But the original shochu was almost all rice, because sweet potatoes weren't indigenous to Japan. It was only after the Portuguese imported sweet potatoes that sweet potato production began. But now, so sweet potato is the most popular, but then rice and barley, and soba shochu has become popular.
Buckwheat.
That's right. That was developed in 1970 in Miyazaki Prefecture.
Okay, so I didn't know it was so new. Okay. And also heard of sesame, green tea, chestnut, carrots, you name it.
That's right. There's actually a milk shochu, which has a little bit of the aroma of the sourness of milk. And it's almost like the aroma is almost a cheese. But then the shochu itself tastes just like any distilled spirit.
Okay. So even has, as far as there's a starch in it, you can convert it to sugar and an alcohol.
That's right.
Right.
A lot of those more rare ingredients like green tea or sesame, there's not enough starch in a sesame seed to make alcohol, so you actually start with a rice or barley base and then add the secondary ingredient.
Right. Okay. And do you know the history of shochu?
There are several theories.
Okay.
It either came up from Thailand through Okinawa to Kyushu, or it came from Korea through the trade route to Nagasaki. And it may have actually developed both ways, because Okinawa has their own distinct form of distilled spirit called awamori, which the Japanese government classifies as shochu, although it's actually a different production process with different ingredients. And then the reason iki shochu from Nagasaki, the barley shochu, is so famous is because that was one of the earliest regions for producing shochu in Kyushu.
Right. Okay. Well, actually, there is a beverage called the soju from Korea. It's S-O-J-U instead of S-H-O-C-H-U. That's shochu Japanese. So it makes sense that, the theory came through Korea. I'm sure that happened too.
That's an accident of language, though, because it has the same meaning. Shaojo in Chinese, soju in Korean, and shochu in Japanese all mean burned liquor because of the distillation process. But if you drink those products in any of those countries, they taste very, very different, and the production processes are different.
Okay. So there's the same origin somewhere, right? And so the shochu is traditionally made only in the south of Japan. And do you know why?
Yes, actually, in Kyushu, it's too hot most of the year to make sake.
Oh.
And yellow koji, which is the traditional koji used for sake production, is really temperamental, and it doesn't create a lot of acid in the fermentation process, and the acid will fight off other contaminants like other molds or bacteria, which can spoil the batch. And yellow koji needs really firm temperature control in order to do its job without those other things growing. So in a cold climate, the growth properties of those other organisms is suppressed because it's cold.
Right.
In a hot climate, those things grow quickly. And so white and black koji, which are used in shochu production, create enough acid to fight off the other organism during fermentation.
Interesting. So now, how do you make shochu, now that we mentioned all those details? So what's the process of making shochu?
So you start with koji. So you start with rice. Rice is the foundation of virtually everything in Japan.
That's
and,
true.
to make koji, you first wash the rice, and then you steam the rice. And then as the rice is cooling, the steamed rice is cooling, you add the koji spores. Koji is a fungus or microbe which grows in rice. And what it does is it converts starches into sugars. And so the koji, you then keep it in a temperature-controlled room called a koji muro, which is the koji room, which is usually a cedar-lined room traditionally. And then you have to maintain the temperature over a two-day period in order to keep the koji proliferating. Then once the koji's essentially done its job to convert the starches into the sugars in the rice, you then add that koji into a first fermentation, which is water, yeast, and then the koji, okay. The koji rice that you've created. And then that fermentation lasts about a week. And again, you have to maintain a constant temperature. But what's happening during that, it's called multiple parallel fermentation. And it's actually unique to sake and shochu production. There's very few other alcohols that use this process, where the koji is breaking the starches into sugars, and then the yeast is breaking the sugars into alcohol. So you're fermenting in two ways at once.
Right, so it's a parallel process.
That's right. Like in beer or whiskey production, first you malt your barley, which is essentially the same as the koji process, to break the starches into sugars. And then your second fermentation is when you add the yeast to create the alcohol.
Right, so it's in sequence, so that's the difference. And I heard that the parallel process creates more byproducts. That's why you have more complexity.
That's right, that's right. So once you've done that, once you've taken those 7 days to create the first fermentation, then you add the main ingredient. So for a sweet potato shochu, you then clean. So you wash the sweet potatoes, you trim out the rotten parts and cut off the ends because the ends are bitter. And then you steam the sweet potatoes, and then you add those steamed sweet potatoes to the first fermentation, adding more water. So you get about four times the volume of sweet potatoes compared to the rice. So you end up with five times as much volume as you had after the first fermentation.
That's why I have to wash a ton of sweet potato.
That's right.
Okay. All right. So it's kind of fermented twice, and then, but it's that it's single distilled, right? This distilled just that's only right. once compared that's to right. like whiskey that's many times distilled.
Yes. So the second fermentation, which is usually between 8 and 14 days, depending on the distillery, you then send it through a pot still, which is a traditional still, one time. And if you send it through more than once, it's no longer called, it's no longer qualified as Honkoku Shochu, which is authentic shochu.
Okay. So there's a higher quality. That's called right. the Honkoku Shochu. Right. And I don't want to get to, to technical things, but just the Gansu low pressure distilled. That's a kind of new technology I heard. It's newly developed. So what does it do?
That's right. So a low pressure still boils at a lower temperature. It's like using a pressure cooker. And because of that, the evaporate that comes out is cleaner. It doesn't have as much of the residual oils, fatty acids, and things that will come through with the atmospheric distillation, with traditional distillation.
Okay. So what's the result? Atmospheric distilled and the low pressure, what's the result of the taste?
With the low pressure, you end up with a light, clean, usually sweet shochu. Often it's very popular with rice and barley shochus.
Okay.
With atmospheric distillation, or juatsu, that's the traditional style, and that's where you're going to get much more flavor, much more richness. It's going to be much more full-bodied.
Like you really taste the original, the ingredients.
That's right.
Okay. Can you see it on the label? It's how it's made, or you just have to ask the...
Usually it's on the label, but the labeling laws for shochu are a little bit esoteric.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about different types of shochu. So please stay with us.
Still paying attention? Are you there? Hello, 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 hello. I'm talking to you. Hi. Hey, this is Jack Inslee. I'm the executive producer here at Heritage Radio Network. I've been here at the station since 2009, and I cannot believe just how much this network has grown over that time. We've been able to grow because of donations from people like you. So if you're enjoying this, if you laughed, if you learned something, contribute anything. $1, $2, $10, $100, $1,000, anything counts. And trust me, we'll appreciate seeing your name come through on the donations. So consider visiting heritageradionetwork.org, click on that little beating heart, the donate button, and show us you care. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from our studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Stephen Lyman, who is an expert of shochu and the founder of the website called Kanpai.us. So I heard there are two categories of shochu. One is ko and the other one is otsu. So what are they?
That's right. So can you define those words for me?
Well, the ko is a... What I understand is it's made based on continuous still and often mass-produced. And as a result, it could be a lower quality. And it's cleaner because it's continuous still. But otsu is more traditional and artisanal and made with natural ingredients. And so it's made with a pot still, so which allows shochu to maintain the flavor of ingredients and more than ko shochu. Am I right?
That's right. But as I understand, in Japanese, ko is actually a superior word to otsu. Is that correct?
Right. It's okay. like ABC on the grade. I think a long time ago, so you are like, you know.
That's right. So the ko shochu actually is what goes into chuhais, mm-hmm. and it's very, very similar to Korean soju.
Right, okay.
It's multiply distilled from mass-produced ingredients in huge factories. Mm-hmm. And because of the multiple distillation, you have no flavor.
Right.
It essentially comes out of the still by the time it's finished at about 90% alcohol, and then it's diluted with water and other ingredients to sweeten it and change the flavors.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned chuhai, so we have another conversation about that later. But you earlier mentioned honkaku shochu, so that's otsu?
That's otsu. Shochu. And that's actually, from a shochu aficionado's perspective, that's a much higher quality. They wouldn't drink ko shochu.
Mm.
They would only drink the honkaku shochu.
Okay, right. And can you see on the label? Or?
Yes, that has to be clearly designated.
Okay, right. All right. And I think the otsu shochu became suddenly very popular in Japan in 2003 because the Japanese media started to say shochu can prevent thrombosis, just like a red wine in 1990 in this country. So
that's right.
Right. Okay. I heard a flavor shochu is affected by different kind of koji, like you said earlier. Stephen brought four different kinds of shochu, and I like my job. So we do a quick tasting. So first, how can you tell us the regions?
Okay.
And the ingredients?
So I actually brought four different shochus today, representing the four different shochu styles that hold Appellation of Origin status from the World Trade Organization.
Mm.
And fortunately, this is also going to give us the spectrum of different koji that's used, as well as both the low-pressure distillation and the atmospheric distillation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll drink from lightest taste to strongest taste.
Okay.
The first that we're trying is actually an Iki shochu, which is a barley shochu produced in Iki, Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
There are only seven distilleries still existing in Iki, so it's a relatively rare shochu. Most barley shochu is now produced in Oita Prefecture.
Mm.
The distinction between Oita shochu and Iki shochu is Iki shochu uses rice in the first fermentation and barley in the second.
Okay.
Oita shochu is all barley. It's 100% barley shochu.
Hmm.
So what we have here is a shochu that actually, the translation is a little bit, like flirt a little bit. This is actually a convenience store packaging,
right.
A plastic bottle, about 200 milliliters or so.
Okay, but you said it's like, champagne or Prosecco, that kind of designation.
That's right. This is frivolous packaging, but it's still a very nice shochu. Now, this is white koji, and it's made with a low pressure still, so it has much less aroma on the nose, and it's going to be a much sweeter, cleaner taste than you'll get from some of the other shochu we try.
Right. It's very smooth and clean, light, but you can really taste mugi, barley.
That's right. And this is, I believe this one's about 20% alcohol.
Okay.
And the second one we have is one of my favorite shochu. This is called Torikai. This is a rice shochu from Kumamoto in Hitoyoshi. And this shochu distillery only makes this product.
Okay.
And they actually make ginjo rice, like in a sake production style, with yellow koji in order to produce this shochu. And they do it in a sake style, so they're continuously adding rice to the fermentation rather than going through the first and then second fermentation process.
Usually sake producers are separate from shochu, but they did together.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
And this is joatsu, or atmospheric distillation, with the yellow koji.
So, well, that's more flavored, like a floral.
That's right, and that's what yellow koji gives you, is it's much more floral and aromatic, where white koji tends to be sweet and round.
Mm-hmm.
The yellow koji can, and it's also very similar to sake, this almost has some anise at the beginning, right. And then it very quickly drops into umami from the rice.
Okay, actually, I've been to this distillery, and the river runs through nearby, and they're so proud of the water quality, too.
That's right. So the third one we're trying is Okinawan awamori. This one is actually a kusu, which is an aged awamori. For shochu, you would say koshu.
Okay.
For awamori, they say kusu. And it's this one is aged, I believe, between 8 and 10 years.
Wow.
In clay pots. This is black koji with long-grain Thai rice.
Mm.
And unlike rice shochu, which they polish just as you would making sake, the long-grain Thai rice is unpolished. So you're getting a lot of the impurities of the outer parts of the rice. You get much more flavor with this.
Mm. And definitely you smell something very much stronger.
That's right. That's right. And this is, again, black koji, which tends to be... I describe black koji as sort of wild and earthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's really unpredictable.
Right.
But with this one, you get an interesting sort of almost caramel flavor on the finish from the clay pot aging.
It's maybe weird, but it's like texture feels like a cloudy, like a fluffy. I don't know where it comes from. That's very interesting and good. And the last one?
So the last one, actually, you're one of very few people that's tried this in the U.S. This is actually the shochu I made the first time I visited Kagoshima.
Wow.
So I brought it in Isami packaging just to show you a beautiful label design. But this is actually Yamato Zakura Takumi.
Mm-hmm.
Which currently is only available in 2 restaurants in Japan.
Wow. How much would it be?
you can't buy it.
Right.
So,
okay.
I mean, in the restaurant, I think it's a normal price. It's about 800 yen a glass in Tokyo.
Right, like $8.
That's right.
Right.
This is a white koji, full pressure distillation, sweet potato shochu.
Mm.
But what makes it unique is it's moroka, so it's unfiltered.
Okay.
The filtering for this basically is wiping it. Dragging a paper towel across the top of the tank to take out any solids that are floating on the surface. But other than that, it's just coming straight into the bottle that way.
That's a very hard, labor-intensive work. But I think this is my favorite because you really smell the potato, sweet potato, and I can think of many different food goes with it.
Yeah, I like this one quite a bit since I was involved in making it. But with the moroka shochu, none of them come to the States because, in fact, many distilleries won't allow it to leave Kagoshima because bartenders in other parts of Japan don't know how to take care of moroka shochu.
Okay.
Because of the residual oils, the oils can actually spoil and then the shochu taste is off.
Okay.
So I actually have to take care of these shochus at home to make sure that they don't spoil under my care.
So mostly shochu have no expiration date, but this one, because it's moroka, unfiltered.
That's right. Most shochu won't change their taste in 25 or 30 years sitting in your liquor cabinet, but moroka shochu, unless you're taking care of it, can change probably within a year to 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So... That's amazing. And I didn't know you can age. That's the third awamori was aged.
That's right.
Right. So what does the aging process do in terms of shochu? Does it make it rounder?
Virtually all shochu is aged 3 to 6 months. That's the standard in stainless tanks. So they're glass-lined stainless tanks. And that's pretty much ubiquitous.
Mm.
Unless you're aging in wood barrels, which gives you the vanilla of the oak. Or the clay pots, which really rounds it out. The clay is unglazed, so it can breathe.
Okay.
And that continuous breathing really rounds out flavors. I really like the clay pot aged shochus.
Mm.
The sweet potato we're trying today is aged for 1 year in a stainless tank, so a little bit longer than the typical 3 to 6 months.
Mm. Okay. So that was the diversity of flavors. That's maybe another reason shochu is so popular.
That's right. I think, unlike other spirits where they might have a lot of flavor, but there's not a lot of breadth to how wide the flavor spectrum is. In shochu, it's almost endless with all the different ingredients.
Right. Yeah, you really don't have the same taste and flavor, smells, everything different. Okay. So how do you drink shochu?
Daily.
Okay. That's how often.
Right. No, so actually, it really depends on the shochu and the situation. So if I'm just out drinking with friends, the easiest way is just to drink it on the rocks, which is how we're used to drinking spirits here in the States, if we're just drinking spirits. Mm. And then in the summertime, I really like shochu with soda. It really brightens it up and brings out some of the aromas. And then, of course, because it's watered down, you can drink longer because you're hydrating. But traditionally in Kagoshima is what's called oyuwari, which is with hot water. Mm. And that's just fantastic in the wintertime. And also when you're eating rich foods, to have the oyuwari sweet potato shochu with all the big, bold aromas and flavors with the rich foods.
Oh, because more flavor comes out. Okay. And can you do neat too?
You can do neat. I tend to do that more as a digestif. So there are some, everything we tried today is between 20 and 30% alcohol. But some shochu is undiluted, so they're not adding water before bottling, and those are called genshu. And in genshu shochu, I tend to drink those neat as an after-dinner drink.
Okay, right. So you can really, by occasion, you can diversify how to enjoy shochu. And, well, the aforementioned chuhai, what is it?
So chuhai is a shochu highball, and it's really a Japanese invention of a cocktail using shochu. And really, it's usually fruit juices or different kinds of sweetened beverages such as ginger ale or Pepsi or Coca-Cola, things like that, which are very, very popular in izakaya, especially among younger people.
Right. And it's cheaper, and I think izakaya cannot do without the chuhai. Right. Okay. And any suggestions about temperature, serving vessels, and other things?
So I tend to like my shochu in sort of In a glass that has a closed top, because that holds in some of the aromas. Because if you have an open top, the aromas dissipate a little bit too quickly.
Right.
I really like to drink oyuwari, the hot water mix, in a clay cup. Mm. Part of it just looks cool.
Right.
But it also just has a different experience than drinking it out of a glass.
Mm. So what's the size? Like, you know, if our listeners want to try shochu, say go get a bottle of shochu, can they use a wine glass?
They could. I tend to use lowballs, the short stubby glass without
a
stem.
Like a whiskey.
That's right. I would usually do something like that if I'm doing it on the rocks. And then I'll use a Collins glass, a taller glass, if I'm doing the soda. And you can also mix it with cold water and ice. That's a mizuwari.
Right. Okay. And temperature?
So for the hot shochu, you want the temperature to be around 50 degrees or so Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want it to be too close to boiling, because alcohol has a lower boiling temperature than water.
Mm.
So if you use boiling or nearly boiling water with the shochu, it'll burn the alcohol off and it changes the flavor. So I tend to try to get the water down to about 50 degrees before I add the shochu.
Okay, to maximize the flavor. Okay, and
sorry, one other point,
please,
about
please.
That. With oyuwari, typically, you want to add the water first and then pour shochu into that, because the convection releases the aromas.
Mm.
If you do it the opposite and put the shochu first and then pour in the hot water, it suppresses the aroma.
Mm.
So some customers actually prefer it that way, but default should be to pour the shochu into the hot water.
Mm. Just quietly.
That's right, quietly.
Okay. And well, I heard that the shochu could help to lose weight. Is that true?
Well, I did an experiment. I do medical research. And so I did an N of one study, which means a study in one person. And that one person was me.
Okay.
And I replaced my usual drinking habits of wine and beer and whiskey and different things with shochu 6 days out of seven. So I could drink whatever I wanted one day a week. But every other day, if I was drinking, I was drinking shochu. And I lost 15 pounds in 7 months.
Wow. Wow. That's a new diet phenomenon.
Part of the trick was that I was eating a lot more Japanese food, because if I wanted to drink when I was out, it had to be in a Japanese restaurant, because shochu is not available in too many American restaurants.
Right, not yet, unfortunately. But listeners, 15 pounds in 7 months.
Seven months.
That's a dream. And you can drink a lot of alcohol.
That's right.
It's very healthy. Well, some people say, you know, shochu doesn't give you any headache. So because it's distilled, and I think it's the type of, you know, the alcohol, how your body fits with it.
That's right. So I think you can get a hangover from shochu. There's no question. But it's more from dehydration.
Mm.
The reason that you get stronger hangovers from like red wine or sake is because there's so much residual sugar.
Mm.
And your liver actually has a hard time processing alcohol and sugar simultaneously.
Ah.
And so that just kind of messes everything up, and then you feel badly.
Mm.
With shochu, because there's no residual sugar, all your liver's doing is processing alcohol.
Mm.
And that's easier for it to do one job rather than two.
Okay. So sounds like a diluted shochu is the way to go. It's healthier, relatively speaking, and it's just the flavor variations. You can have it every day because they're different flavors, and then it doesn't hurt your liver as much.
That's right. We should always drink in moderation, of course.
Right. That's the first.
Although one of the longest living Japanese in history, he died in his 120s or 130s, something like that. It's kind of, nobody knows exactly when he was born. He was from Okinawa, and he was drinking black sugar shochu every day for the last 50 years of his life.
Wow.
That was his secret to longevity.
Mm. Well, I think I believe in it. Okay, so you said you serve shochu every Tuesday at the Sakamai in Lowai Side, which is a cool combination bar and restaurant. So what kind of program do you have there?
So Sakamai currently has about 50 shochu, both on menu and off menu. I try mm-hmm. to keep things in stock that are kind of hard to find, but they may not appear on the menu. And then every Tuesday we have a happy hour to introduce shochu to our customers. It's between 7 and 9 p.m. because I work long hours in my other job. And I basically talk to the customers about shochu and introduce food pairings and different things like that.
Oh, wow. So you're an educator. So you change different kind of regions, or you kind of like have a different theme each time?
That's right. I'll theme based on koji, based on the base ingredient, based on the prefecture. Since I had just come back from Japan, the last time I bartended there, I poured shochu from the distilleries I visited on that trip.
Okay, great. So who order those different kinds of shochu at Sakamai?
We have a pretty diverse crowd that comes out for the happy hour. It's a number of Americans who love shochu, and then we get some Japanese tourists. Actually, for some reason, it's become known in Japan that if you visit Sakamai on Tuesday nights when you're in New York, you can drink shochu.
Well, I think you're doing a very amazing thing as an ambassador. Right. And you said that you serve with food. So what kind of food pairings do you suggest with shochu?
So rice shochu, I tend to try to pair more with lightly seasoned vegetable dishes or sashimi, kind of what you would do with sake usually.
Mm.
And then sweet potato and awamori, I tend to go with much richer flavors.
Mm.
I find awamori goes really, really well with something like steak tartare.
Wow.
So a raw, rich meat like that with the awamori, the fats in the awamori and the fats in the meat just go lovely together. Sweet potato shochu is going to be fried foods, grilled meats, mm. yakitori. One of my favorite things is tonsoku, the grilled pig's feet.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay, so we have a good diversity of pairings.
That's right. And then barley shochu, because it actually kind of goes with everything. It's very easy to pair barley shochu with a lot of different kinds of food.
What would you suggest with turkey for Thanksgiving?
Ah, that's a good question. I might do a fuller bodied barley shochu because of I'm thinking of the aftertaste of turkey.
Mm.
And I think a nice full bodied barley shochu like Yamanomori or Taiso might go really nicely with that.
Okay, because there's some nuttiness, right? And that would go with the stuffings and chestnut, those kind of things.
That's right.
Right? So barley shochu with turkey. Okay, and I heard you also offer lectures about shochu at the Gohan Society, which is a non-profit organization to promote Japanese food culture, I think. And would you like to talk about it?
Yeah, so we've started a shochu program with Gohan Society where we're actually doing tasting dinners throughout the year, and we've decided to do seasonal tastings.
Mm.
And where we're deviating from that is around the holiday season, we're doing Bonenkai and Shinenkai.
Right, which is?
Forget the year party and welcome the new year party.
Right.
So we'll be late December, we're having a Bonenkai at Shigure in Tribeca. And then in January, we're doing Shinenkai at Azas on Lower East Side.
Okay. So what kind of, if our listeners are interested, they can get information where? Gohan Society?
Gohan Society website, which is gohansociety.org, or on kanpai.us, my website.
Okay. Right. So, all right, anyone can go, and then enjoy different kinds of shochu. And do you teach classes first, and then people enjoy food, or just eat and drink?
This is really intended to be more of a nomihodai.
Okay.
So just eat and drink and have a good time, but I'll be there to answer questions if
okay.
you're curious.
Okay, that'd be fun. Okay, and any recommendations for places to shop shochu in the city?
So the best selection for retail is at Landmark Wines
okay.
in Chelsea, and then there's a very nice selection, a smaller selection at Sakaya in the East Village
okay.
for buying for home use.
Mm.
As far as drinking out, I would say, of course, Sakamai. Shigure has a great selection, Umenoye in the East Village, and Soba Toto and Shochu and Tapas Aya in Midtown East.
Okay.
Oh, and Shimizu, which is a sushi restaurant in a hotel in Hell's Kitchen that has a phenomenal shochu selection.
Oh, okay. I passed by and it was like a very quietly existing place, but I didn't know they have a great selection.
They have a shochu bar in the back, actually, which is the hotel bar. So you'll be in there with like Irish tourists who have no idea what shochu is.
Oh, wow.
Drinking beer, and then you come in and you're drinking shochu and they get curious and ask questions.
Interesting. All right. So, well, thank you for joining us today, Stephen. And if you do like to know more about Stephen's work and shochu, please visit Kanpai.us. Kanpai.us, that's KAMPAI.us. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org. And by the way, we just launched a beautiful new website, so please visit that page. Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritagenetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher Podcast. Today's show was made possible by Suntory, and our engineer is Liz Smith. I'll see you next week. Thank you for coming.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.